Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus on OVNI. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and my guest today is SUNY Professor Rosemary Armeo. And Rosemary is going to, she went down to Washington for the Women's March, and she's going to share her thoughts on the whole experience. So did you go down by... Did you drive down?
Yes, I have a sister who lives in Silver Spring outside of Washington. So another sister up here, a cousin and a friend, we loaded up a car. We went down. We invited. We kind of filled my entire sister's house, pushed my brother-in-law out of his bed so he could have his space, and filled it all up. And then we took the metro in from Silver Spring to the mall for the demonstrations. So many people went down by bus. I think all the charters were filled coming out of Albany. There was the biggest crowd I've ever been in my life. Of course, the last time I did any protesting was back in the 70s against the Vietnam War. But there were well over 600,000 people in the mall. Of course, they called it the Million Woman March at first, and had planned for 250,000. All planning went out the window. There were just so many people. You couldn't even march. The original idea was a march, but the entire route that people would have gone through was clogged with people. So that didn't even come off. And it was all good. It was amazingly inspiring. It was peaceful. There was not a single arrest despite all of those people gathered. And while others have disputed this, I didn't see even a whole lot of litter at that crowd. People were even respectful of laws on littering.
You say that it was the biggest rally you've seen for many years. You think that this rally was bigger than the protests leading up to the Iraq War?
At the beginning of in the middle of the Bush administration, I do see that. And of course, crowd estimations are an art and not just a science. But the numbers I've heard is that nationwide, with marches in over 600 cities, not just Washington D.C., the number of women who turned out was around 3.3 million. That's extraordinary. The challenge, of course, is what do we do next? You can't just come out for one day, for a few hours on one day, and expect anything to change. So we will see what happens. I know that the women that were marching near and around me felt they were, A, part of something very historic, and that, B, they couldn't let the momentum die, that they had to act now with donations, with support for candidates, with education of kids about what's going on, with maybe running themselves for office. Very much that was the feeling.
Now, when you spoke to the other participants when you were down there, would you say that the majority of those people, I'm sure there were a lot of men there too, the majority of the people did not vote for Trump?
I would say, yeah, the majority didn't. I don't know how many out of that crowd voted. I mean, that was, why couldn't we have had that sort of turnout and enthusiasm before the election? Donald Trump criticized the demonstration, saying, you know, we already had a show of force. It was called Election Day, and he's not completely wrong about that. I think that we all are going to be paying a price for coming awake to what might happen, what is happening. We came awake to that too late.
You know, you just used an interesting phrase, what might happen. This was on his first full day of assuming the presidency. Nobody really knows what he will enact. And the implications of what he does, how it will affect the society. Why do you think initially so many people came out to protest the new administration?
Well, I can't accept really the premise of that question, that we don't know what he's going to do. He's been telling us for 2 years what his plan is. And during the long period between Election Day and his inauguration, he began acting like a president before he even had been sworn in. And we saw his nominees for cabinet posts. So we know pretty much what's coming. And it looks frightening to many of us. It looks like regulations that have kept our air clean and our water clean are going to go away. It looks like the Dakota Pipeline and the Keystone Pipeline, environmental concerns that scare us, are going to go away. All mention of climate change has been removed from the websites of the Trump administration. What does that tell you about what's going to happen? Let's see. I would have said, based on the people I talked to at the march, that environmental concerns were number one. Women's rights and reproductive rights was number two. We already saw the new president yesterday, what is that, second day in office, signed a measure cutting off federal support to any overseas NGO that either offers or gives advice about abortion. So he's already acting on that promise. And the third concern probably was about jobs and salary. He has come out strongly against minimum, any kind of raise in the minimum wage. So we know a lot of what he's doing. We're already seeing he's canceled the TPP. He's going after NAFTA. He brought in auto industry executives today. So he's coming down hard on manufacturing, which may be good. Many people like that. I think he won a lot of votes based
right.
on those policies. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, he may be setting up a huge trade war in which every nation will fight now for itself, and it's a dog-eat-dog world, and I'm not sure anybody benefits in that situation. That's the part where we have to wait and see what the consequences will be of all this.
Now, were there a lot of... I'm sure there were a lot of signs down there. What did some of the signs say? What were people there for?
The signs were amazing in their artistry and in their creativity. The little girls were everywhere. My favorite had on a Supergirl cape and a tutu. And they carried signs that said, "Be kind," "The earth is my mother," and that was like, and as I said, you could tell from the signs what people were going after. There was an unusual amount of, hold on, listeners, Jenna Taylor out there, women were reclaiming words that have for years, for centuries, been used to shame them. So you saw vaginas and vulvas and uteruses everywhere. My favorite sign may have been held up by a group of Mexican men, and they sat on top of food truck overlooking people that were parading by, and the sign said, "No, we won't go back." But the sign they held up didn't show a map of Mexico. It showed a map of, showed a picture of a uterus. So, like, we all come from women. Some of them were extremely clever. I liked, you know, "This Trump administration is only going to result," or what was it? "Stopping abortion will only result in more Democrats." That was pretty funny. You know, the signs also pointed out to me that people, women who organize these march have to do a much better job talking with each other. The women's movement has always been this. We've always fought among ourselves. When the movement began, it was like, should lesbians be involved? You know, they're different than the women. And then they were embraced. And right now it seems to be between women who favor abortion and those who oppose it. And there has to be room in a protest against Donald Trump for women who believe both ways. And I don't think we're there yet. So I sort of wandered from the question about signs, but there you go.
I'm sure that this he's going to be able to pick a couple, maybe even more, Supreme Court justices. If there's enough justices on the court to tilt in favor of abolishing Roe v. Wade, what do you think that's going to do to this country?
Well, abortion is you know, just such a huge divisive issue. We've been there before. Abortion, when I was a teenager, when I was in college, was not legal. And women did what they had to. They took unsafe actions. Hangers are well known as an instrument of self-mutilation to get rid of children. They also organized to carry women into states, out of one state where it was illegal into states where it was legal. They surreptitiously got doctors to perform these operations. I just don't see all of that again. On the other hand, abortion truly is a really bad form of contraception. It's expensive and it's dangerous. And what we really may need is sex education and contraception. So I think you're going to see a lot of women's action along those lines. The abortion rate in this country has been falling. It's not very high. And in the debate, we saw Donald Trump bring up late-term abortions. We had this specter of babies close to coming out on their own, being ripped from the womb and thrown into the trash heap. And I mean, that is so rare and so horrible a medical decision that the government should not and need not be concerned with it. So it's such a politicized issue, and I really don't think that it needs to be. If it were a huge problem and we saw thousands of babies everywhere, you know what I mean? If it were, if we had as much trouble with that as we do with children who don't have enough money to eat well in schools, which we don't pay attention to, then we should be fighting fighting much more than we are over abortion.
As a journalism professor in school and college, you've lived through a number of administrations. And let me take Barack Obama for a second. There were a lot of his policies that a lot of the progressives, quote progressives and quote liberals, did not like. Do you believe Barack Obama got a pass from the press? And do you think they're overly vigilant with Donald Trump?
That's an interesting question. First, no, I don't think Obama got a pass. The press never gives a pass to a president or to anyone who's in a position of power. That's what the press does. That's who you're going to investigate. That's who you're going to examine. That's who you're going to look at to see every little thing they do. So, no, I don't think Obama got a pass. He was criticized for many things, including, you know, problems with the with what has come to be known as Obamacare. It was far from a perfect bill, and you read a lot about that in the media. You heard about his coldness, his inability to work with Congress, his promise never kept to become the nonpartisan president, the person who would bridge the gap. Lots and lots of criticism against Obama. But do we treat Trump differently? I certainly see a difference on the opinion side, the editorial page side, if you will, and that pertains to broadcast and online, not just newspapers, but the opinion side rather than the straight news side. And that has been overwhelmingly anti-Trump. And in terms that I've never seen before, I think we've talked about this before, Cynthia, instead of just saying, we think Hillary is a better candidate, instead of saying, we don't like Donald Trump's policies, these editorials, uniformly, there were only a handful of papers in the whole country who supported Donald Trump. These papers instead said things like, he's a unique danger to democracy. He's the worst candidate ever. Publications that did not normally even do presidential election endorsements went out of their way, like Atlantic Magazine, to write anti-Trump articles. And they saw themselves as being brave. They weren't going to sit aside and treat this man like any other candidate. They were going to speak out and tell people what they really thought. That's how they saw it. How do readers see it? They see it as a real effort to attack Donald Trump in ways they never, newspapers and other outlets had never done before, and that it was unfair and showed the real bias. And the credibility rating of the press right now is as low as I've ever seen it. And I do think there's a relation between one and the other.
Do you There was a hostile tone over the weekend with the administration towards the press. Do you think that will have bad effects going forward? In other words, if first impressions count, then the first impressions were that the administration was going to be belligerent. And do you think Donald Trump's love of Twitter is going to continue?
Okay, to take the second one first, yes, I think his love of Twitter and his extremely effective use of it to bypass the usual institutions, including the press, will continue. It's worked for him for 2 years now. Second, Sean Spicer, the new presidential spokesman, got off to a terrible start. He called in the press and did not take any questions. He just issued this angry little proclamation that Donald Trump had more people come to his inauguration than any president in history, period. And then he stormed off.
Right.
And, of course, there's you know, copious photographic proof that just simply is not true. He told a bald lie and then defied anybody to question him or to challenge him and walked off. Not your best first impression. Yesterday he really tried to come back from that a little. He made some jokes about it, about his lack of popularity, and he issued a statement saying that it was not his intention or the intention of the Trump administration to come out and lie to the press. I think that he's going to have to work hard to prove that. There's not that feeling yet. Yes, he definitely got off to a bad foot. And considering that his angry little proclamation came right after Kellyanne Conway, a senior aide to the president, telling Chuck Todd on the network's network news that no, Spicer hadn't lied. He had simply used alternative facts. And that has reverberated across the whole country with people mocking her and saying, you know, the definition of an alternative fact is a lie. So that was not the best way to make the point I think she was trying to make, that she, you know, Spicer was simply using information different than those of reporters. She might have said it that way, for example. And on top of all this, Spicer said that Donald Trump felt that the press was after him, was denigrating him, and that he felt bad about it, and he was fighting back. So, no, there is not a warm and cozy relationship between the press and Donald Trump at this time. But don't forget, Donald Trump is the president. He's the most powerful person in the world. He commands a huge array of communication devices and ways to get his point across. So it's a pretty interesting battle that's shaping up.
I think so, too. I think the style between Obama and Trump is day and night, and it's going to be interesting because Obama was kind of slick and he was charming, and Trump doesn't come across as charming. It's like, you know, you do it my way or you get hit over the head. So I think it's going to be an interesting 4 years. So all in all, so far, you think that the Women's March is going to resonate into positive political action?
Yes, I do. I totally do. I think that may be one of the good things that comes out of all this, that we're going to see women and young people especially get re-involved in government and activism. How can that be a bad thing, you know?
And run for office themselves?
Yes, I think so. My ex-sister-in-law, for example, wrote to me yesterday and said, you know what, I'm looking at the school board. Never thought about that before. So, yeah, I see it already in my personal life. I got a call from someone this morning just before we were going to go on the air, so I haven't returned the phone call yet, saying, hey, get hold of me as soon as you can. There's a big problem with, and it's an Albany County political problem. So, yeah, I have even in just a couple days since we got back from the march, I'm seeing that women are energized. It's not a bad thing.
So, are you going to include Donald Trump in your curriculum?
Well, I'm teaching the image of journalists in film as my main course this year, so I'm not quite sure how I'm going to do it. You're going to look at the role of journalists. And I said to the class yesterday, it was just the first day, I suspect that the role that we do the comparing to is even changing right now with Donald Trump and fights between the press and the administration. I do know that my colleagues have been including the Spicer interview, press conference, in their classes. All of them are talking about ethics, the ethics of journalism, you know, what is the nature of objectivity in today's media environment. So Donald Trump definitely has provided teachable moments for young journalists.
Which is a good thing. Right?
Yes. Well, maybe. I wish that President Trump, as President Obama did, and believe me, President Obama was no friend to the press. He put more whistleblowers into jail and went after the press in ways we haven't seen since since President Nixon. So Obama was no friend, but he proved it again and again, including in his last press conference, that he understood the role of the media in an American democracy. There's a reason the press is mentioned in the First Amendment. Even, may I say this, above guns, which is only the Second Amendment. And Donald Trump seems to think of it only as an adversary and not as another player with a role in the government. And that's not good. Not good.
There were other presidents in the past that had the same view of the press as in an adversarial role. So it's not a new phenomenon.
Well, we certainly saw it with Nixon was anti-press. I think he's probably the most anti-press president in my lifetime. Others had healthy suspicion. Eisenhower had televised news conferences, the very first one. Yeah, he didn't really trust reporters. And when you're in an adversarial relationship, it's hard to have actual trust. But the kind of thing that we're seeing from Donald Trump, I still maintain Cynthia, that it's different. It's just a whole different level. And it has to do with shutting out the press, with excluding them, denigrating, putting down their role, trying to make people not listen to the press at all, which is dangerous. It's just really dangerous. Where's the regulation? It isn't coming from the White House. The White House wants to get rid of regulations. So where do you get the truth from these days? And on top of that, we have Donald Trump, who has now sent two political operatives, not communications experts, political operatives, to the Voice of America, which is and has been for a long time the overseas propaganda arm of the United States. New legislation allows the Voice of America to broadcast into the country. So is Trump setting up a propaganda administration? I don't know. And I perhaps I'm all wrong. I really hope I am. But while I sure am going to be watching it.
You know, people say that, you know, this country is, Trump is, you know, going to turn America into fascism. But don't you think that there are a number of safeguards in government to ensure that this does not happen?
Well, I think that Germans thought that there were safeguards against Hitler when he first came to power, and I do see similarities. I think that especially with Republicans now in charge of every branch, the White House, both houses of the legislature, and soon with Trump appointees, the Supreme Court, that it would be very easy to overcome all the supposed checks and balances. I look at Trump's refusal to give away his tax forms, to show his tax forms. That we haven't seen that in 40 years. I look at his refusal to truly divest his companies which is right in the Constitution, but since we were founded, since the 1700s, that 49-word section on emoluments in the Constitution has never been tested in court. So Trump, he's going to get away with it. He's going to not divest. Anybody who brings a challenge, or the vaccine, a couple of challenges, I think they'll either go away or they'll drag on for at least 4 years until he's done being president for the first term. So you have to remember that a whole lot of our safeguards and protections are based on tradition and long-term practice. There's no law that says, let us see your tax return if you want to be president. So he didn't do it. And I think he has many very good lawyers who know the laws better than I do. And, I think he could do anything he wants. I think, for example, he'll take advantage of fear. If there is, God forbid, I surely don't wish this, but any sort of terrorist attack or outbreak of civil violence, I worried about it even in the Women's March, Trump will send in soldiers or police. And you're going to see the declaration of martial law that would shut down all kinds of checks and balances. So, no, I don't feel very protected. I feel like we're at an especially difficult time. I've asked the question whether we're facing a constitutional crisis, and I haven't asked that since the Watergate scandal in the early 1970s. I am a bit of an alarmist, however.
Hey, that's fine. Everybody's got their views. And your views are food for thought, and, you know, people can discuss it. So one of the things we talked about doing in the future is the quote-unquote fake news. Do you think that's still a relevant topic?
Oh, yeah, more than ever. Fake news, or is it propaganda? Where does it come from? How do you know it's fake versus authentic news? And how do you get it past the rhetoric, which we're already seeing? Fake news is not news you disagree with. That's real news you disagree with. Fake news is not news that contains a mistake. You heard a lot this week about the Time magazine reporter's error that came from reporting erroneously that the Martin Luther King statue had been removed from the Oval Office. That was not true. Was it fake news? No. You know what it was? It was really, really bad reporting. It was based on one reporter blurting out something that he saw without checking it with anybody, without asking others about it. He put it – that's really bad reporting. I don't condone it at all. It makes the press look as bad as Donald Trump says it is. But that is not the same thing as fake news. Fake news is that Hillary Clinton was running a child trafficking operation out of a pizza parlor in Washington, D.C. We had someone believe it so much he went in and shot up the place. Ridiculous. Fake news is many of the stories that we saw about Hillary Clinton. My high school friends were all Trump supporters here in conservative Colony, New York, were convinced that an FBI agent involved in the Hillary email scandal had been shot, or I guess he killed his wife and shot himself. I don't know. The stories were very muddled. That was completely baseless, not true. These same friends were convinced that Congress was giving Barack Obama's mother-in-law a lifetime federal pension for taking care of her grandchildren while they were in the White House. That doesn't make any sense. It isn't true. It's completely fake news. And, you know, there's always been hoaxes, there's always been errors, but what we're seeing now is something, it's planned, it's directed, it's designed to make people not trust anything in the news. It's a big problem.
So let's do our next show on whether Trump sets the tone for what's going to be said through his Twitter account, and the concept of fake news. What do you think?
Sure, anytime you want to.
Okay, thank you, Rosemary. You've been listening to Rosemary Almeida, and she's been talking about the press and also about the Women's March. So if you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, download on your smartphone, subscribe to iTunes, and if you have a comment about this, you know, #FocusOnAlbany and share your thoughts. Rosemary, have a good day, and thank you for sharing your observations on the Women's March.
Thank you.